Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take complex topics, unpack them, and give you the insights you really need. Today, we're jumping into federated learning. It's this really fascinating, revolutionary way to do machine learning. You've probably heard about it, right? It lets different groups train AI together without actually sharing their sensitive raw data. Sounds like a perfect privacy setup. But what if I told you that the very way these systems are built, the structure itself holds a major vulnerability right out in the open?
Yeah, that's exactly the paradox, isn't it? Federated learning FL, it promises privacy because the data stays local. But more and more research is showing these unexpected ways privacy can leak. And we're not just talking about the usual suspects like gradients or model parameters. What we're really looking at today is something more fundamental, something that's been kind of overlooked. It's the actual structure of the networks FL runs on. Just knowing how the system is connected can, surprisingly, let someone infer things about data distribution, even with all the standard privacy protections running.
Okay, hold on. Let's unpack that. FL is a huge deal. You see it in healthcare, finance, edge computing, places where data is really sensitive. The whole point is collaboration without compromising privacy, but you're saying the focus has maybe been too narrow, just on the content.
Exactly. Most current privacy tools, things like differential privacy or, you know, crypto methods, they largely work on this one big assumption. They assume the bad guys, the adversaries, don't know the network structure, how it's all wired together. And that assumption, well, in the real world, it often just doesn't hold up. Network topology information, I mean, how things are organized, it's often visible. You might see it through infrastructure logs or just knowing the organizational relationships, maybe even compliance rules that say how data has to flow.
So the actual map of the network, that's the weak spot. How does an attacker even use that? What can they learn from just the connections?
Well, we've pinpointed three distinct but complementary ways attackers can exploit the structural information. They don't need to break the encryption or anything like that. These methods work on different channels altogether. They look at observable metadata, behavioral signatures, things that are still visible, even if the content is scrambled or noisy.
Fascinating. So it's like reading the patterns, not the messages themselves. Okay, so what are these three sneak attacks?
Right. So the first one is communication pattern analysis. This looks at how participants talk to each other. Like in a decentralized setup, maybe nodes with similar data finish training faster, so they communicate less often overall. Or in a system with a central hub, the routing patterns might give away how data is grouped organizationally. An adversary just watches the communication frequency, maybe the volume, and starts clustering nodes based on what they infer about the data. And get this, under, you know, perfect lab conditions with full network knowledge, this attack alone hit an 84.1% success rate for figuring out data patterns.
84%? Wow, that's incredibly high. Just from watching who talks to whom.
Yeah, it's surprisingly effective because those communication patterns are so basic to how the system works, right? It's hard to hide them completely without just breaking the FL process.
Okay, what's the second vector?
The second is parameter magnitude profiling. This one's a bit more subtle. It involves looking at the size or magnitude of the updates participants send back after they train locally, but before everything gets averaged together. It turns out that how varied the data is on a participant's device systematically changes the size of these updates. So for instance, a node training on data with lots of rare examples might send back updates with larger overall values, larger gradient norms. An attacker can look at statistics over time, like the average size, how much it varies, how stable it is as the model converges, and infer things about the data distribution. This one scored a 65.0% success rate in our tests with complete knowledge.
Still pretty high. So the strength of the update signals something about the data mix.
Okay.
And the third.
The third is structural position correlation. This leverages the fact that in the real world, where a participant sits in the network, often correlates with the kind of data they have. Think about hospitals collaborating. A major research hospital might be a central hub in the network and handle rarer cases. Smaller clinics on the edge might see more common stuff. So an attacker sees a node as highly connected, maybe central, and might infer it holds, say, specialized data just based on its position and maybe the general characteristics of its updates. This attack had a 47.2% success rate. It works best when those real-world constraints, geography, organization structure, create clear links between network position and data type.
Right. So it's not about cracking the code. It's about observing the context, the behavior, the structure, the position, reading the digital body language almost.
Okay, but you mentioned complete knowledge. That sounds like a best case scenario for the attacker. What about more realistic situations? Adversaries usually don't see everything, right? Exactly. And that's crucial. So we tested these attacks under six different knowledge scenarios. These range from, say, a researcher just looking at general traffic statistics up to a malicious insider who knows the org chart.
And this is where it gets really interesting, I think. You found these attacks are surprisingly tough, even when the attacker only has part of the picture.
Absolutely. That was a key finding. In 4 out of 5 of the realistic partial knowledge scenarios we tested, the attacks were still highly effective. All 3 methods stayed above our 30% success threshold. For example, even an adversary who could only see their immediate neighbors in the network maybe 1 or 2 hops away, they could still reliably infer patterns. Communication pattern analysis hit 76.5% success, even with just 2-hop visibility.
But the real surprise was the organizational knowledge, wasn't it? Can you talk about that? Why does knowing the org chart make such a difference?
Yes, that was perhaps the most counterintuitive result. When an adversary knows how the participants relate institutionally, like which nodes belong to which department or business unit, it changes everything. So let's say the attacker knows the nodes fall into maybe 3 broad organizational groups. With that info, the structural position attack suddenly jumped to 74.1% effectiveness.
Wow, wait, that's much higher than the 47% you mentioned for that attack with complete network knowledge. How can less technical detail but more organizational context make it more effective?
It's because that organizational context provides semantic meaning. It helps the adversary interpret the raw structural data. They can filter out noise and focus on correlations that matter. Knowing that node A is finance and node B is R&D gives the attacker a powerful lens to view the network structure and parameter updates through. It's like having an annotated map instead of just a bunch of lines. It actually improved the attack success by 57% over just knowing the raw topology perfectly.
So it's not just what the network looks like, but why it looks that way. That's the key vulnerability. Okay, so what about the existing fixes, like differential privacy? Isn't that supposed to handle this kind of leakage?
Well, differential privacy definitely helps. It provides measurable protection, adding noise to obscure individual contributions. But against these structural attacks, its power is limited. Even when we applied quite strong differential privacy using an epsilon value of 1.0, which is pretty strict, the communication pattern attacks still worked 74.2% of the time, and the parameter magnitude attacks still successful 52.8% of the time. Across all the attacks, the most the DP reduced effectiveness was only about 18.8%.
Only 18.8% reduction, even with strong DP, that's concerning. It suggests DP isn't really designed for this kind of structural information channel.
That's what the evidence strongly suggests, yes. Current ways of accounting for privacy, mostly focused on content, seem insufficient against these structural inferences.
And does scale help? If you have a really big network, hundreds of participants, does that naturally hide things better, dilute the signals?
You'd think so, but our simulations didn't really bear that out. We tested networks from 50 nodes up to 500, and the attack effectiveness remained pretty consistent. Communication pattern attacks, for instance, stayed around 68.7% effective on average across that whole range. So simply adding more participants doesn't seem to provide privacy through obscurity here. In fact, you could argue the increased organizational complexity in larger systems might even create more structural signals for an attacker to exploit.
Okay, this paints a pretty challenging picture. If the network structure itself is a vulnerability, and existing methods like GP aren't fully cutting it, and scale doesn't automatically fix it, what's the path forward for secure federated learning?
Yeah, it means we need to think differently, add new layers. We need fundamental advances. One promising direction we proposed and tested is something called structural noise injection. It's designed to be a complementary defense. The idea is to directly target these vulnerable information channels, the communication patterns, the timing, the update sizes, and add calibrated noise right there.
Interesting. So noise injection, but aimed at the structure, not just the content. How does that work, practically speaking?
Well, for communication patterns, you could say inject some dummy communication events, fake messages that look real but don't carry actual updates, just to muddy the waters. For timing, you could add tiny random delays, Gaussian noise to when messages are sent, obscuring patterns related to convergence speed. And for the parameter magnitudes, you could apply a bit of multiplicative noise to the size of the updates before they're aggregated, scrambling that signal.
And you said complementary. That's key, right? This isn't meant to replace differential privacy.
Exactly. It's about layering defenses. We use structural noise injection alongside existing mechanisms like differential privacy and maybe participant subsampling. The benefits can actually be multiplicative. In our tests, combining them gave up to an additional 51.4% reduction in the success of the topology structure attack beyond what DP alone could achieve. It's really about building a defense in depth strategy. You need to protect the content, yes, but you also need to obscure these structural and behavioral signals.
That makes sense. It offers a practical way forward then, adding another layer specifically designed for this kind of structural leakage.
Well, this has certainly been an eye-opener. We started thinking of federated learning as primarily a data content privacy solution, but now we see this whole other dimension, the network architecture itself, as a source of leaks. It's quite a fundamental challenge, but as you said, it's not necessarily doom and gloom. Solutions like structural noise injection show there are ways to build stronger, more layered defenses.
It really forces us to think more broadly about privacy in these collaborative AI systems. And maybe this leaves you, our listener, with a question to ponder. If true privacy means protecting not just the what, but also the how, the relationships, the timings, the behaviors between participants, how do we strike that right balance, the balance between efficient collaboration and robust privacy in these increasingly complex distributed systems? Finding that balance might just be critical for the future of secure, trustworthy AI collaboration.